What is innovation? It is the ability to be creative. But what drives creativity? Would you be surprised to find out that perhaps being insecure in your innovation, in your ideas, in your creativity could actually lead you to be more innovative? In today's episode, I'm going to be talking with the authors of Creative Insecurity, and they've got some interesting ideas to share.
Are you an entrepreneur, small business owner, or consultant looking to boost your authority, influence, and impact? The Author Switch podcast with best-selling, award-winning author Karma Spence is your answer. Tune in for actionable advice, powerful strategies, and engaging interviews to turn on your author switch and take your business to the next dimension. The Author Switch.
Hello, and welcome to the Author Switch podcast. I am your host, Karma Spence, and I help executive coaches, business leaders, and consultants write, publish, and market client-attracting books to grow their business. Like I said, today I have two individuals on my show who are the co-authors of this book, Creative Insecurity. The first is James Sweeney, a serial entrepreneur who started 14 healthcare companies with original ideas, none of which have failed. That's amazing. He has raised $2 billion in capital and generated more than $30 billion in exit value. His companies have saved or extended the lives of millions of people. He has been acknowledged as the founder of the multi-billion dollar home infusion therapy industry, having founded Caremark, the industry pioneer and leader. Today, he mentors startup founders and other professionals in the art of failing your way to success. My other guest is his co-author, Rhonda Lauritsen, who is a professional author with multiple published books and is a regular speaker at international conferences. She has an MBA from the University of Utah, served as CEO of her family's business, and as a state college VP. She founded Evolog.life, a life storytelling company, in 2016. Welcome to the Author Switch.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So we're going to be talking about this book, Creative Insecurity. And I was leaping through it before while I was preparing for this episode. I'm like, this looks like a really interesting book. But let's talk about it a bit. First of all, what an interesting title. Creative Insecurity. Now, I know a lot of people are insecure about their creativity, but why would you call your book that? Do you think it's a good thing?
I think it's a combination of things. If you go to Webster's and you look up insecurity, it's viewed as a negative. You want to be insecure. And I believe just the opposite. I think insecurity is a good thing, not a bad thing. It's a bad thing if it paralyzes you. But it's a good thing if it allows you to get out of your own way and go on and do something. I could give you a lot of examples. I'm sure you have a lot yourself where you ran into an obstacle. How do I raise capital? How do I go public? How do I sell a company? I have no idea, so I'm insecure. And that insecurity allows me to overcome with things that I are standing in the way of my figuring out how to do that. So I believe that we fail our way to success. You know, when I was brought up in Owatonna, I was taught, you know, you want to be a big success, you don't want to be a failure. Mm-hmm. And I believe that they're inextricably intertwined. And you look at scientists, starting with Benjamin Franklin, how many times he failed before he figured out electricity. Have you heard of WD-40?
No.
WD-40 is a very, very popular oil used to eliminate leaks and all that. It happened to be a San Diego company, so I'm familiar with it, being from San Diego. It was named 40 because that was their 40th attempt to get the formula right.
Oh, my gosh.
And they are now in 167 countries with over $400 million in revenue. So imagine if they'd quit at 39.
Yeah. And they are the go-to squeak stopper, you know?
They are indeed. You got to squeak WD-40 it.
Yeah, I'm sure the Tin Man and the Wizard of Oz used WD-40. Tell me a little bit more about this failing your way to success. I mean, I know I'm familiar with the book Fail Forward. and his name, for I forget the author's name. I can see his face. I forgot his name. John something. Anyway, I mean, I've read the book. I understand to some degree how you just have to, every time you fail, because you're going to, you can't be afraid of it. You just have to put your big person pants on and get up and go again. But it sounds like you've got a slightly different take about failing and success.
I do. My take is this, Karma. Imagine embracing failure, welcoming failure, because failure is integral to success. And that's the thing that we miss. We think you don't want to fail. No, I disagree. You do want to fail. Because if you fail, you're going to learn something. And you're going to fail again. And then you're going to be on number 39. And then you're going to fail again. And you'll have deputy 40.
Right. It's kind of like you're always with that thing where you're like millimeters or inches away from diamonds. You never know when you're at that point. And if you give up, you could be at that point. And you, one more try.
And you get gold. I have something in the book you may have seen. It's called the Inner Reader's Trifecta. And the Inner Reader's Trifecta is a triangle. Mm-hmm. And it's the base of that triangle. And it's at the base because it's holding everything else up. It's the most important thing. I don't care how successful you are, you have to maintain humility. Mm-hmm. Humility is the bedrock of everything. If you have the humility, then on one of the axes, it's what I call the no-quit gene, which I learned from the Navy SEALs in San Diego, which is they will die before they quit. Mm-hmm. And the whole purpose of the training is to get you to quit. Because if you quit in the training, they probably save your life. If you quit in battle, you're probably going to get killed along with a lot of other people. So the no-quit gene, vision, which is an interesting topic because coupled with the no-quit gene is my belief that you've got to know not to marry a mistake. In other words, you've got to know when to throw in the towel, which is a little bit nuanced related to not quitting. I used to tell my kids when they would listen to me, I said, they were really young. I said, if at first you don't succeed, try 1,000 times. And there's so many examples of people, very famous people like the Microsoft founder and so forth, they talk about failure, 10,000 hours before you succeed. So it's integral into this whole approach to success.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking when we first started this conversation, how creative insecurity keeps you humble. I think that humility is really important because when you get too big for your britches and think you're all that in a bag of chips, then it makes you not very likable. And that just leads to the kind of failure that you can't recover from.
I had an experience in my first company where I was on the cover of the Wall Street Journal with Caremark. And they basically said, this stock is so expensive, you got to hold your nose and buy. So I was a hero. And then one day, Medicare said, oh, we've decided we're not going to pay you for this. So the stock went from 30 to 3 in one day. So I went from being a hero to being a bum. And I realized, guess what? I'm not a hero and I'm not a bum. So I put my head down. Eight quarters later, I had the stock at 45 versus the 30 that it collapsed at. So it's all about accepting failure. Hubris is a great undoer.
Yeah.
Hubris will take you down every time. And we've seen many, 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 many examples of people who start to believe their own press, and then they're in trouble. Then they're in trouble because they've lost their humility. And also, I know when I started my first company and it was successful, very successful, I had the imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, am I a one-and-done person? Can I only do one of these and I'll never succeed again? Well, 15 companies later, I know, I just started number 15. 15 companies later, I now know, you know, there's a method to this. It has to do with being a contrarian and looking at things differently and saying, you know, the way we're doing this, it doesn't make sense. There's a better way to do it. And then figuring out what that is. And that's what I've been blessed, thank you, God, with doing that 14 times successfully.
Now, you have a contrarian's checklist that this helps people follow that methodology, right?
Precisely. The contrarian checklist is exactly that. It's things for you to think about and consider as you're considering starting a company. And I've gotten a lot of very good feedback on it, so I'm really pleased with it. I created this book with Rhonda not to make money. I don't really care about the money. I did it because I want to help people be successful and get out of their own way. And we've been blessed with so many people who says, my life has changed as a result of this book. And, you know, people ask me, how many people have to say that to make it worthwhile? And the answer is one. So sorry to take first help. Yeah.
I tell this to my clients all the time. If you do more than one book, it never gets old when you get the first copy in your hand. It never gets old.
Right.
It's delightful every time.
I want to interject as well with regards to, you know, your clients, the podcast listeners here are authors, right? And so in the contrarian's checklist, one of the ideas is you were looking for $1 billion ideas. And most likely none of us are going to make $1 billion writing a book.
Right.
But what is the value of a life changed?
Absolutely.
What is the value of the ripple effect? So through our ideas and our word, we definitely can have that sort of impact.
Absolutely. And now the people I work with are actually writing books to grow their business. But I think that idea is still applicable because the people who read client attracting books, they're either going to not read it. There's always that option. But the ones who actually read it, they're either going to be transformed by the book and be happy with that, or they're going to seek further help from you. And that's what I try to tell my clients is it's not everyone who reads the book will become a client. And that's okay, because you're still having a ripple effect.
Very well said. Very well said.
Now, a lot of what you're advising means that there is risk involved, because coming up with your billion-dollar idea, is it a billion-dollar idea? How much of yourself do you put into it before you realize maybe this is a dud? And there's navigating that nuance between giving up too soon and not marrying, what did you say, marrying a mistake. How do you mitigate this risk and understand when it's a mistake and when you're potentially just inches from gold?
That's a very, very good question, Karma. And it's very nuanced as well, because I know when I have decided not to continue to pursue something, I had overwhelming input. I'll give you an example. It was a very famous university, and I started a company that was going to take neonates home, low birth weight babies home from the neonatal intensive care unit. It was a wonderful idea. I hired a bunch of nurses. We were going to take these babies home. And I met with this doctor who was running the program, and she said, Jim, I love what you're doing. And when I retire next year, I'd like to join you in doing this. In the meantime, I'm not going to refer any patients to you. I said, really? Okay, tell me more. She said, I get $4,000 for every one of these kids. We call them growers. And they pay for the really sick kids. So I'm not giving any of them. I said, you know what? This dog won't hunt. It's time to throw in the towel, because and it's sad when you think about it. They were basically holding these kids hostage. But the reality was, there wasn't anything you could do about it, because unfortunately, healthcare is not driven by personal harm. It's driven by economics.
Yeah. That is kind of sad. Wow.
Well, don't get me started on that subject.
So I want to loop back to the original question, because Jim has something else that I've really learned to embrace from his philosophy. And he said part of it there, and that's this idea of tell me more. Jim is constantly panning the landscape and asking, what am I missing? And just maniacal about figuring out the risk and panning that way. So for me, that was one of the big takeaways from this book is, yes, take risks, but mitigate those risks as much as possible.
Right. Because you are going to miss things when you first look at something, especially if it excites you, because you get focused on what you like and, who cares about those things I don't like?
To me, the key is to be highly insecure about what you don't know, highly insecure, and figure it out. When I went to raise venture capital for the first time, I went to about 10 venture capital firms before I went to the firm that I really wanted to get capital from. And when I got there, 40 years later, one of the principals said, Jim, in the last 40 years, we've never met anyone but you who had an answer to every single question we asked. Well, the reason was I already knew what all the questions were going to be because I'd done my homework. So I came highly prepared. But the tell me more thing is so critical because tell me more opens your ears and closes your mouth. You know, you want to learn more. You want to hear more. And tell me more. Man, oh, man, I can't tell you how many times those three words have led to opening everything. And then I would also observe there's a famous Indian proverb that said, goes along the lines, it's better to cast your spear at the stars and hit the moon than at the moon and hit a rock. So that to me says aim high. And when I talk about billion-dollar ideas, I learned something early on. Whether it's a billion-dollar idea or a million-dollar idea, it takes the same amount of time. So why not go for the big idea?
Yeah, it's interesting that you said that. As you were saying that, I realized I have a model myself that says, aim for the stars, and if you only get to the planets, heck, that's pretty darn good. I guess I wasn't the first to come up with that idea. So another idea you have is this idea of it is better to be first than to be right. And I know that that would bring up a lot of fear for people. Why do you believe this so firmly?
I'll tell you why. When you really stop and think about it, the thing that I say is that being first is more important than being right. You can be right later. You can only be first once. And the reality is when you're first, you go in and you sit down and you say, let me tell you, Kramer, about this new company. And you listen and you go, well, that's just like when you say that, it's over. Mm. When you say, oh, that's interesting, tell me more, because you're first. And guess what? You know, the term pivoting is a very popular word today. The reality is I've never started a company that didn't have two or three near-death experiences along the way. So you've got to pivot your way to success, and you will succeed, but being first is so important, and you will get right, but you'll get right as you fail your way to success.
Yeah, that's true. And often, if you're first, even if you fail, you're still remembered because you were first.
Right.
So it's got a perk in there, buried in there, right?
I had a friend many years ago. You may recall the first computer game was called Pong.
Oh, yeah, I had it. My dad brought it home.
And Nolan Bushnell was a friend of mine. And Nolan Bushnell was an extremely interesting guy. And he was the first. He introduced the first computer game. And he'll always be remembered for that.
Oh, yeah. I remember spending hours in front of the television, my sister and I, watching it go, ding. And sometimes you didn't even have to play. If you set it up right, it just played itself.
Yeah. So the value, you know, and these things that I'm telling you are not meant to just be cute little sayings. They have to be backed up with evidence. And there's strong evidence of what I'm telling you.
Tell me more.
How much time do you have?
We can talk a few more minutes.
Good. Rhonda, we've been dominating this a little bit. What would you like to throw into this milieu?
Well, there is one note about being first and being right. There are many cautionary tales, and this is one of the controversial ideas in the book, because there are many companies that were first that are no longer around.
Yeah.
And the reason that they're no longer around comes down to hubris.
Yeah.
They're first, and then they think they've got it made. They stop innovating. They stop listening. They stop taking in data. And so you can have a tremendous first mover advantage as long as you continue to innovate and you continue to be humble.
Yeah.
And that gets back to the tell me more. You could be first, but that doesn't make you right. Tell me more, tell me more, tell me more will get you to being right.
Now I've got Grease playing in my head.
Well, now I won't be able to get it out of my head too. So thank you for that, Carmen.
You're welcome.
I was on a podcast the other day with someone, and I started talking about Fiddler on the Roof, and he goes, in 15 years, no one has mentioned Fiddler on the Roof. I said, when you're rich, they think you really know. Well, da-da-da-da-da, that's so untrue. When you're rich, they think you really know.
Yeah, well, you know, that's hubris.
That's hubris.
That's hubris. Well, we've come up to about the amount of time I like to allot for this podcast. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you would like to share?
I think you pretty much hit everything. That's I'm sure we could talk for hours, but a lot of the important high notes.
Perfect. Well, is there any place that you would prefer people get this besides Amazon?
Well, the beauty of Amazon is you can go to Kindle and buy it for half price. The audio is coming out in April, so you've got three ways of acquiring the book. And then Simon & Schuster, as I'm sure you know, is a distributor.
Right, right. Well, I highly recommend this book if you are an entrepreneur and want to become creatively insecure so that you don't fall into the hubris trap and you're constantly asking, tell me more. Thank you so much for joining me on the Author Switch today.
You were delightful to talk with, Karma. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, this is the end of the Author Switch podcast. This is your host, Karma Spence, saying ciao for now. If you've enjoyed this episode of the Author Switch podcast and would like to show your support, there are a few ways that you can do that. First, I encourage you to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Additionally, leaving a rating and review would greatly help me reach more listeners and continue providing valuable content. To stay up to date with the Author Switch podcast and gain access to additional information on amplifying your authority, influence, and thought leadership through books, you can follow me on LinkedIn at Karma Spence. For those interested in catching up on previous episodes, including those no longer available on podcast platforms, you can find them all at authorswitch.com/episodes, where you can choose to watch or listen to them at your convenience. Thank you so much for your support and for being a part of the Author Switch community.